I'm Todd McKay.
And I'm Franco Terrazano.
And this is the Canadian Taxpayers Podcast. We're dedicated to lower taxes, less waste, more accountable government. And today, in deep dive, we're going to talk about how the feds can implement a taxpayer-friendly recovery. We got a big hole to dig ourselves out of. There's easier and better ways to do it and worse ways. So we're going to talk about some of the easier ways. And in Waste Watch, it's one thing to blow money on a party. It's another thing to blow other people's money on a party. And then there's a whole other thing to blow money on a party that's above and beyond what you were even planning. We got a story about that. But first, let's check in with Franco. Franco, how are you doing?
Oh, man, I'm good. But I'm always happy when taxpayers score victory. And right now, the CTF and our supporters, we deserve some credit because we've been keeping up the pressure on the parties who've been taking the federal wage subsidy. And just to rewind for a second, that federal wage subsidy was the program that was meant to help businesses, help them keep their employees at work, help them and keep their employees on staff. But unfortunately, some political parties have been having at the taxpayer trough and helping themselves to that subsidy. Well, Aaron O'Toole, when he was running to become the CPC leader, he told us that he would pay back the subsidy if he was successful. And now he's leader. You know, now he's leader of the CPC, and we're happy to report that the CPC is going to be paying back that subsidy.
Yeah, we blasted all of the federal political parties on this, except for the Bloc. They were the only federal party that didn't take the money. We hammered them all. The Conservatives are the first ones to start doing the right thing and start paying back the money. And that's a good start for Aaron O'Toole. In opposition, it's easy to make a lot of promises. It's hard to be held accountable because you're not in government yet. But he's keeping this promise because he can. Here's what Conservative Member of Parliament Peter Kent had to say about his party paying back the wage subsidy. Quote, O'Toole believes the wage subsidy was designed to help businesses survive the economic side effects of the COVID-19 pandemic lockdown, not to subsidize political parties. Man, I don't know if I could say it much better than that. It was kind of obvious to me from the start.
Yeah, that quote is spot on. And, you know, we've got some other news to report on this as well. The Liberals, well, they said that they're going to be stopping accepting the subsidy, but they don't have any plans to pay it back. Now, the federal NDP, they don't want to take their snouts out of the taxpayer trough and will still keep accepting the subsidy. And of course, the Bloc, well, they didn't apply for the wage subsidy in the first place.
Yeah, and the first place, that's an important phrase to use in this situation. They should never have been taking this money to start with. It was meant for struggling businesses and workers trying to keep people at work in a tough time. So any party that took the money needs to be paying it back ASAP. The Conservatives are working on that. We want to put pressure on the other political parties to do that. When you look on the provincial side, though, it's interesting. Virtually every political party in every province said, nope, we're not going to take the money. They did the right thing, except for one. Franco, tell us about that.
Yeah, that's right. And it's important to also consider the provincial governments too, because, you know, at the end of the day, there's only one taxpayer, right? So we got to look at the federal parties. We also got to look at the provincial parties. And when the story first broke that there were some parties taking the federal wage subsidy, we looked into the provinces to see which provincial parties were taking it. And it turns out only Alberta's United Conservative Party among the provincial governing parties, they were the only ones who was taking the federal wage subsidy. So Premier John Horgan, Premier Scott Moe in Saskatchewan, you got Brian Pallister in Manitoba, Premier Doug Ford in Ontario, and of course, Premier Francois Legault in Quebec. I mean, they all knew that taking the wage subsidy was the wrong thing to do, but Premier Jason Kenney and Alberta's UCP were taking the wage subsidy. And now this story gets even worse for the UCP because Alberta's NDP, Alberta's own New Democrats, aren't even taking the wage subsidy. And when you look at the numbers, the UCP out-fundraised the NDP by hundreds of thousands of dollars during the first quarter of 2020. And, you know, on top of all of that, Alberta's political parties are already receiving big-time taxpayer subsidies that's costing us taxpayers millions of dollars every single year. So when you break it down, the UCP taking this wage subsidy is like a rich person going to the soup kitchen. And of course, on top of that, they're supposed to be the party that's looking out for taxpayers. They should know better. And absolutely, they need to pay this money back.
Yeah, this one's really bizarre. I think the only argument that would make any sense to me in terms of the Conservatives taking the money in Alberta would be, sort of the everybody's doing it argument. Well, if the other guys are taking it, we got to take it or else they're going to have an advantage. But that's not even the case in this situation. The opposition's not taking the money. So what in the world is the governing party doing, taking that money? It doesn't make any sense. But that's all right. We'll keep putting pressure on these folks. You know, Aaron O'Toole did the right thing. The federal Liberals are sort of kind of thinking about maybe moving in that direction by at least not taking the money. We'll keep putting pressure on all of these parties to do the right thing, stop taking money that is meant for struggling Canadians. We have a petition on this issue. Check it out in the show notes. Let's put ratchet up that pressure, because we need everybody pulling on this one. It's time for us to take our deep dive into important policies. Aaron Woodrick, you're our federal director. You're here. What are we talking about today?
Well, we're going to talk about the federal deficit and the fact that right now the federal government is actually spending $2 for every dollar that it's collecting.
You know, it's interesting. When you look at all of the economic information out there, it's easy to get boggled by the complexity. But if you think about the fact that the government is spending a toonie for every loonie it's collecting, you think about that in a family perspective. If you're spending $2 for every dollar you're bringing in, you've got to come up with a plan. And, you know, it's one thing at the start of this pandemic, everybody's scrambling. Families, businesses, governments, everybody's scrambling. But we're 6 months in. You got to start coming up with a plan. The Trudeau government's about to unveil its throne speech. There's been rumors about a lot of spending there. Spoiler alert, I guess. The Canadian Taxpayers Federation is probably going to criticize some of that spending. But the standard comeback to that kind of criticism is, okay, smart guy, what's your plan? So let me put that to you, Aaron Woodrick. All right, smart guy, what's your plan?
Well, we have certainly spent some time thinking about what the next move is. Like anybody else, this really caught us off guard. And so we wanted to really sit and think about the best way to sort of get out of this. So we did come up with a plan that we've put out. Broadly speaking, there's two parts of the plan. I mean, first of all, spending needs to go down. That shouldn't surprise anybody. And then secondly, we need to think about ways to get the economy going. And that's where I think, you know, we're going in a bit different direction than the government says it's going to go, but we want to try and push them on that. And we basically just laid out a number of things that we think government can save money on, and then also proposed a bunch of things that we think they can do to help the economy bounce back.
Okay, let's start on the, I feel like it's not hard to find places to save money. So let's start there. What are you putting on the chopping block?
Well, like I said off the top, right now we're spending about $2 for every dollar coming in right now. You don't have to be an accountant or a mathematician to understand that that's not sustainable. And people often forget that in spite of all the pandemic spending, we still had a deficit even before. Even when times were good, the economy was growing, there was no reason not to balance the budget. We were still running deficits for years. And so we couldn't even afford the government we had before this, and we certainly can't afford it now. And the bottom line is we need to make some tough choices. There's no getting around the fact that we cannot spend on everything we've been spending on up until now. And so we've put forward a few ideas about where we think the government can save money. And top of that list is government employees. There are almost 380,000 federal government employees. They have been essentially completely insulated from the effects of the pandemic. They haven't taken any pay cuts. There have been no layoffs. We think that the government needs to start to tighten up spending on employees. And we think that over the next couple of years, they need to do two things. They need to reduce the headcount of the federal government by about 15%. And then for everybody else, there needs to be about an average 15% pay cut. And there's a number of ways you can go about doing that. And it all doesn't have to happen tomorrow, but it is something that they need to do over the next few years. And they need to start thinking about it seriously. You know, another big ticket item is corporate welfare. They spend billions of dollars every year. Again, this was before the pandemic, on businesses that don't make money. And taxpayers should not have to prop up large corporations that are not making money. So they need to turn off the taps on corporate welfare.
Okay, but I think we need to make an important distinction on the corporate welfare side, because there are supports like wage subsidies and those sort of things. But that's not what you're talking about. Draw the line here.
Yeah, there's a big difference. I mean, the difference is, first of all, before the pandemic, businesses were getting money. There's no reason for them to get it other than the government thought that they should get it. Now there are businesses who have been ordered to shut down. The government essentially put most of the economy into an induced coma. I think it's reasonable that the government has to provide life support. You know, if a doctor puts you under, they have to make sure you stay alive. So that's very different than corporate welfare. And our fear, frankly, is that they will try and use the pandemic as an excuse for more corporate welfare after the shutdown ends. But really, it's a question of political reasons versus life support based on what the government has done to a business.
Yeah, when it's across the board programs, that's one thing. When politicians are picking their favorites, kind of looking at you, Bombardier, you're the kid in class who gets that every time. Shouldn't be getting that kind of those special handouts. Okay, so what else are we talking about? You want to trim back salaries and expenses for bureaucrats? It's never happened before. Our friends over at Second Street did some research on it. Federal bureaucracy's never taken a pay cut before. I think that's a reality that's going to need to hit home for government employees. But what else? What else is on the list?
Well, if you look at some of the departments, there are some things that are just not priorities. I mean, you look at a department like Canadian Heritage, there's a lot of things like art festivals. They're nice things. People love them. But are they really the highest priority right now? If you can't afford stuff, then you should not be putting money out the door for it. So that's one department where they need to take a hard look. Another one is global affairs. I mean, we have dug up so many waste stories. I mean, they're spending tens of thousands of dollars on cushions. They bought crystal glassware. They have this mission cultural fund. I mean, there's money just bleeding out left, right, and center from foreign affairs. And, they could go without that spending. So that's another easy thing for the government to fix. There's crown corporations like the CBC, for example. There's a big debate about what the CBC does, whether you get rid of it entirely or you privatize it. We certainly don't think they need as much money as they get right now. That's for sure. We think their spending can be reduced. There are other entities that a lot of Canadians won't know about, Canadian Council for the Arts, the National Capital Commission, which is responsible for the messes of 24 Sussex and Harrington Lake. These are entities that could either have their funding cut dramatically or even abolished in some cases and have those responsibilities given to other departments. And then, another big one from the perspective of symbolism, if not in dollars and cents, is members of parliament and senators. We think they need to take a pay cut. Maybe 20% would be a good start. They've done this in other countries. It's a good way to show some leadership and to, frankly, show some solidarity with people who've lost a lot more than that. If you're an MP making 180 grand a year, you can probably afford a 20% pay cut, certainly more than most people could. And then the governor general, that office, regardless of who is in it, we do not need to be spending as much as we do on the governor general. So we think that budget could certainly take a chop.
Oh, the governor general is one that just makes me nuts. The fact that we're still covering the expenses for past governors general, like the current governor general, needs to rein in the spending. But surely to goodness, we don't need to keep, paying the bills for these zombie governors general from the past. Okay, so that's a lot of different line items, but what's that total up to? What kind of savings are we talking about here?
Yeah, we're looking at about $30 billion. Now that's nowhere near the $400 billion of the deficit this year. There's a long way to go, but it's a start. And right now the problem we have is that no one even wants to talk about the start. It's been taboo. There are a lot of people who throw around the word austerity when really it's about arithmetic. You can't spend more than you have forever. And so we think it's better to start that conversation now. The sooner we tackle it, the sooner we start taking steps, the less painful it will be in the long run, because we know from experience, you put something off, it's going to be really painful to try and deal with it all at once.
Okay, so that's starting to tackle the spending problem. It's a big problem. It'll take a lot of tackling. But on the other side, we have to get the economy rolling again. What kind of plans do you have there?
Yeah, and this one is a particularly big problem. As much as the focus is on the spending side, I don't think we're actually talking about how serious the economic malaise is right now. Usually, traditionally with the deficits I've had to criticize in Ottawa, you can close the gap usually just by keeping a lid on spending, making a few cuts. It's possible to do it that way. This time, that's not possible. That doesn't have to mean the government spending the money. The other way to go about it is you could let Canadians spend more money, and you do that by cutting their taxes.
Okay, so let me be the obvious devil's advocate here. If we're short of money and you cut taxes, doesn't that mean we'll have less money? How do you square that up?
Yes, that's a common objection, and I've got a couple of answers to it. So first of all, it lowers the cost for things. Even the prime minister and the finance minister get this. That's why they're promising that they're not going to raise taxes right now. So they understand the impact of taxes on costs for people. And I think they need to take that logic a step further. If not raising taxes makes things easier, well, what if they lowered them even further? That would make things easier for businesses and for individuals. Secondly, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty right now. That's what's really holding back a lot of businesses from investing, from taking risks. They need a little bump. They need a little nudge, an extra incentive, you know, to invest, to hire more people back. And, you know, making the burden lower makes it a little easier for them to do that. So we think that a tax reduction has an impact there. And third, and maybe most importantly in this context, it's fair. Unlike most of the traditional stimulus, which is governments picking who gets free money and who doesn't, with a tax cut, it's across the board. So you don't pick winners and losers. If you're a business, if you're a household, you get the break, and then you can decide for yourself what the best way for you to spend that money is.
Getting the government out of the kitchen on trying to cook a recovery sounds like a pretty good move on that front. But what are we talking about specifically here? What taxes are you recommending we trim?
Sure. So in our plan, there's a couple. First of all, we think that small business have been particularly hard hit. A lot of people will be, you know, attuned to that in their community. Small businesses are struggling. So we're proposing a two-year temporary tax holiday for small business. No small business tax rate for 2 years. For larger businesses, we think cutting the rate from 15% to 10% would be a good move. And then for income taxes for households, we think a 1% cut for every income bracket, top to bottom, is something that's doable. Of course, the carbon tax is one that we've long been fighting against, and we think that that should go. And there's a couple other smaller ones, including there's a tax on alcohol, believe it or not, that goes up automatically. We think that's bad for a bunch of reasons, not least because people often need a drink right now, and making it more expensive is just seems in poor taste. But also, it's just wrong to have taxes rise automatically. We think government should have to stand up and face the music when they do it, and so we think it's a bad precedent that needs to go. And there's a couple other things like there's regulatory barriers like the Impact Assessment Act that make it hard to build natural resource projects. That's something that the government could do just to reduce red tape. And of course, cracking down on loopholes. You know, there are people who are breaking the law or skirting the law. They're not paying their fair share of tax. And we need to make sure that they're doing that.
Okay, so you've got a whole menu there of tax cuts. And when you look at particularly small business, giving small businesses a better path to recovery so that they can hire back more of their neighbors, we need people taking those risks. So betting on those folks makes a ton of sense. We do have to be conscious of the price tag. If you trim back these taxes, what kind of a quote-unquote cost does that come with?
Yeah, we tallied it up for the ones I've just proposed, and it'd be about $20 billion. And, you know, we simply think that it's better, if you're going to spend the $20 billion, it's better to spread that out amongst millions of Canadians and thousands of businesses rather than just have the government pick a handful of winners who get all the money. And remember, with what we've proposed in as part of this plan, if you know, we're proposing to cut spending by more than the tax cuts, so the deficit will still actually shrink.
Okay, so it still shrinks, but let's be honest about the scale of the problem. You still got a $400 billion deficit. Let's be honest about this. Are we going far enough, fast enough here? What are we talking about?
Well, yeah, obviously it's not going to be done in a year, but here's the thing. If you actually stop the emergency spending, the stuff that they have said is temporary, you can actually shave down the deficit to maybe around 100 to 120 billion within a year. But the key to that, of course, is to control the spending and then reduce it. While on the other side, making sure the economy gets humming again, that gets your revenues up. And then you close the gap even more. So, you know, a lot of the time people forget that you can actually raise more revenue with a lower tax rate if you have more people who are working and more businesses that are doing well. So in some cases, it is true. It doesn't always happen, but it is true sometimes that you can actually cut tax rates and end up with more revenue. So if we look at the most optimistic scenario and following a plan like the one we proposed, I do think we could be back to balance in a few years.
Well, and the reality is here, there's a lot of uncertainties here, but if you're going to place a bet on either government trying to figure out where to spend the money to get our economy growing again, or betting on Canadians and Canadian entrepreneurs to do that, I'm betting on Canadians and Canadian entrepreneurs all day long rather than bureaucrats and politicians. But let's talk about those bureaucrats and politicians. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland, where are they going though? What kind of path do you see them on?
Yeah, it's safe to say they're not of a similar view today, but they have changed their minds already. I mean, we heard them, you know, 2 weeks ago talking about a big green recovery. They seem to have smartened up on that. They recognize, they've read the room and recognize that most Canadians are not there. And so I think they really need to think hard about whether doubling down on some really expensive spending, you know, with a handful of favored businesses is something that most Canadians are going to support. And, you know, it's interesting that Freeland herself, she actually wrote a book. It's called Plutocrats. I recommend to everyone to read it. It's a good book. She talks a lot about, you know, special interests, trying to get free money out of government. She talks about crony capitalism. These are things that, you know, she's very aware of, that these groups come and try and suck up taxpayer money. And it's the rest of the people who lose. So it's going to be interesting to see how she applies that knowledge, you know, in this context. And of course, you know, at the CTF, we're going to wait with much anticipation. There's a throne speech on September 23rd, and we're going to make sure that taxpayer voices are heard loud and clear about it.
Yeah, we're definitely going to keep a close eye on it, because the reality is we have to trim spending. It's a mathematical necessity. And on the other hand, if we want Canadians and businesses to get the economy rolling again, let's bet on them by lightening that tax burden on them. All right. Thanks a lot.
Hi, I'm Scott Hennig, president of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. Sorry for interrupting the podcast, but I wanted to take a few seconds of your time to tell you more about the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. We are 235,000 Canadians from coast to coast that are fed up. We are fed up with politicians taking too much out of our paychecks, often to waste it on a bunch of pet projects, corporate welfare, and pork barreling to buy votes. We organize campaigns to push back on these politicians. These campaigns often include petition drives, billboards, media stunts, and more. But most importantly, they ask our supporters to pitch in and take action. Alone, we're a voice in the wilderness. Together, we're an army to be reckoned with. You can join the fight and sign up at no cost at taxpayer.com. That website again is taxpayer.com. Okay, now back to the podcast.
It's time for Waste Watch. It's kind of frustrating, maybe funny, depends on how you look at it, because we're going to make fun of stupid things governments do with our money. Franco, what are we talking about today?
Well, Todd, you're my boss, right? Well, now what if I came up to you and I said, I want to throw a party and spend thousands and thousands of dollars?
I'd probably say, hey, man, could you write up a job posting for Alberta Director? That's probably what I'd say.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, turns out the federal bureaucrats at the Department of Shared Services Canada, well, they devised a plan to spend thousands of dollars on an awards night for themselves and their boss, unlike you who would tell me to, yeah, definitely give my head a shake. Their boss said, you know what? You know what would make this plan better? Yeah, crank it up a notch. Go out there and buy and roll out a red carpet.
That's crazy. You go to the boss with a crazy plan for an expensive party. And he says, hey, let's crank it up. Let's make it a little crazier. So this is another red carpet party bureaucrats are spending money on, money from taxpayers. Earlier this year, we found out the federal communications bureaucrats, they got together, spent $12,000 on a red carpet gala. And you'd think shared services would have looked at that and said, those guys, they kind of got roasted for that. Maybe we better dial it back. Maybe we should just try to fly a little bit under the old radar there. But nope. Shared service is like, hold my beer and watch this.
Yeah, hold my beer is right. And that would have been an expensive beer. So shared services this year spent more than $27,000 for their party. So that's more than double the budget for that other red carpet gala that you just mentioned.
You know, it's so bad, it's almost impressive. Like, how do you go, like, so far over and above the other fancy gala Break it down for us a little bit. What was Shared Services Canada spending that money on?
Well, first, they flew in an award winner from France. Yeah, apparently some IT bureaucrat was doing such a good job overseas that they couldn't just video in him and accept his award. They needed to fly him in.
This makes no sense on so many levels. First of all, in general, if you win an award, maybe you get a trip to France, not a trip from France to Ottawa. That makes no sense. Also, this guy's an IT expert, an information technology expert. Like, did he forget his Zoom password? He couldn't just show up virtually. Hey, thanks for the award. I'm going to go down to that awesome Parisian cafe. They have to fly this guy across the Atlantic to accept a phony baloney made up award.
Yeah, that's a bad one, but it gets worse, as you're probably expecting. Okay, so the budget for the catering, that's $3,000. Remember that red carpet I was talking about? Yeah, I wasn't joking. There was a red carpet, and it cost taxpayers $600. And then it cost $4,000 just to make the awards.
It's so crazy. Like, when you break it down, how is it that nobody looks at that and says, hey, you know, maybe $4,000 to make up these fake trophies? That seems like a lot. Okay. But that stuff's crazy. You said the boss dialed it up. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so here's exactly what happened. There was an email from a person who was a part of the, let's say, party planning committee, and they emailed their executive at Shared Services, whose name was Rose. And this is what the email said. Good morning, Rose. In keeping with the president's request to upscale the awards of excellence ceremony, i.e. make it a red carpet event.
Yeah, so the party planning committee goes to the immediate supervisor, says, hey, the president's sent us a note, wants to dial it up a notch. We're going to go even bigger. You know, when our investigative reporter, James Wood, dug up that document, I just about spit my coffee. So you'd think the higher ups would be the ones sort of tapping the brakes on it, being the voice of reason. But nope, their view, go bigger.
Yeah, so we gave the department a chance to explain some of this crazy spending. Well, apparently that employee who they had to fly in from France got in some FaceTime with their bosses over the two-day trip, so I guess it made it worth the money for them. But beyond that, all we really got back from the department was a boilerplate defense of the party. Here's exactly what the department said. Quote, once a year, the Shared Services Canada's Award of Excellence honors employees from across the country for their hard work in collaboration with internal and external partners to provide timely, efficient, effective, and professional services. It is important to have our employees recognized, valued, and celebrated. You know, I'll leave it up to our listeners, but certainly doesn't sound to me like that's a good use of our tax dollars right now.
Yeah, efficient, that's part of the award criteria. Efficiency. I'm pretty sure you could efficiently have a little get together for less than 27 grand. Listen, anybody who wants to learn more about the story, we've got it all up on taxpayer.com. Check it out there. All right. So that just about wraps up the show for today. But frankly, you know what? I thought we'd have a little fun and go through the old mailbag, because we get some feedback on some of these stories. And that last week's Waste Watch story, we definitely got some feedback about that. Let's go through a few of those.
Yeah, last week's episode's a hard one to forget. That's the one with the Mission Cultural Fund that spent thousands of dollars on a photo exhibit for Brian Adams, as well as a bunch of money to put on a sex toy display in Germany.
Yeah, and just to be clear, those are two separate things. One is Brian Adams showing off photos he took of the Prime Minister and the Queen and a whole bunch of other things. And then there's a totally separate event with an artist named Peaches, who put on a big display of sex toys in Germany at taxpayers' expense.
Yeah, so let's get into some of the comments that we have from our followers. Well, Todd, it turns out one of our YouTube followers is a bit of a Peaches fan. This is what they had to say, and I quote, Peaches is a musical artist with a long history in the musical business. Educate yourselves. I do agree her art form has totally evolved around sexuality. Well, that's a bit of an understatement, Todd. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I fired up the YouTube to listen to some of Peach's music. On the music side of it, I'm more of a Bryan Adams guy. I got to be totally honest with you. But here's another comment. Quote, "This is beyond stupid. What the hell? Is no one employed to monitor waste of money?" Yeah, like we are. Like you and me, Franco. This is pretty much what we do all day. We monitor this waste of money. To be fair, I think the commenter in this situation is saying somebody at the government should be keeping an eye on this stuff and making sure that money doesn't go out the door so we're not catching his waste. But, you know, it's a valid point. Somebody ought to be keeping an eye on this.
Yeah, but a government bureaucratic department keeping an eye on waste, that's a bit of an oxymoron, isn't it, Todd? Now, I got one last one that I want to share with you, and I think this one might just take the cake. Here's a good quote. "Only velvet paintings of Elvis should qualify." Well, I guess hard to disagree with that one.
Okay, but you know who Elvis is, right?
Oh yeah, of course I do. The king of rap.
He's like you're a young buck. I don't know. I feel like I need to give you a little bit of homework. You know, dial up a little bit of a few tunes from the king. Anyway, that's it for today. Thanks to James Wood for editing the show. He did a great job of piecing this together for what we managed to record.
Yeah, and thanks everyone out there for listening.
Hi, I'm Scott Hennig, president of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. If you've got another minute, I'd like to ask you to think about the one person you know that would really enjoy listening to this podcast. Do us a favor and do them a favor and send them a quick note to let them know about it. At the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, we believe there is power in numbers. That's why we've worked so hard to build an army of taxpayers who are ready to push back. And we did it because people like you shared our work with that one person that they knew would really appreciate taking part. Thanks for listening. And thanks for doing your part to make Canada a better place.